Good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. So the story out of New York today, the U.S. Airways crash into the Hudson River. What an astonishing story! It's just an unbelievable skill on the part of the flight crew, the flight attendants, the captain, the co-pilot in bringing that aircraft down and then getting everybody out. It just unbelievable stuff. I'm not going to dwell on it too much because we've all heard every single aspect of the story that we could that could possibly be of any interest today since it happened. When was it? Late this morning, I believe. I think it was late this morning. One little sidebar to the story that I found, Kathy and I just found hideously amusing, if you know what I mean. Once it was became clear from all the news reports that nobody had been killed. And I think there was only one injury that required hospitalization. One of the passengers wound up with either one or both legs broken, and a couple of cases of hypothermia. But once it became clear, excuse me, that this was not going to be a tragedy, we had a chuckle about this. Kathy was off someplace listening, running some errands, and listening to CNN. On Sirius satellite radio in the car, and I'm home watching CNN. And a bunch of the survivors are coming up. They're being hauled up on the ferry boats and up on the pier, and everybody is kind of in a state of mild shock, as I damn sure would be. And that one guy that was interviewed by everybody was being interviewed, but in the background you could hear this voice, this woman's voice. Very insistent, saying, "Do you want to be on the Rachel Maddow show tonight? Do you want to be on the Rachel Maddow show tonight? Sir, do you want to be on the Rachel Maddow show tonight? Can you make it today? Do you feel good enough to be? Would you be interested in being on the Rachel Maddow show today? We'd love to. Would you be?" Over and over. And I swear to God, if you turn on MSNBC right now, you will see the guy, Billy Campbell, or hear his voice. And you know, to have a producer like that. Now, the Hudson River is not that far from Air America Studios. I'm not sure where it is vis-a-vis MSNBC. But to hear that voice in the background over and over and over again, and that was on CNN. Would you like to be on the Rachel? Can you be on the Rachel Maddow show? Over and over and over again. So anyway, whoever that was, good for her. Good for her, because I'm sure that she understood that this was not a tragedy, a story of a tragedy at all. It was a story of skill and unbelievable ability. And yeah, you're right. You know, you knew this was coming. I couldn't help but think about comparing this flight crew and the flight attendants and what they did to save the lives of 150 people and their own lives. Compare that, their expertise, their professionalism, to this jackass that gave his goodbye world speech tonight. Huh? Email here from Wendy, who writes, "I think there's an amazing symmetry between the plane crashing and everybody surviving and Bush finally saying goodbye. He wrecked the country, but it survived. Sort of." Yeah. The so-called miracle on the Hudson, and the miracle was that this pilot, Chesley Sullenberger, was trained as well as he was, and that the flight attendants on U.S. Airways Flight 1549 were trained as well as they were. That's the miracle as far as I'm concerned. But you want to know something? All the people involved in this, the two pilots, three flight attendants, are union members. Huh? How about that? Chesley Sullenberger is a veteran of 40 years. He's been flying for 40 years. And as Ron Moore, writing it, I don't know where I got this offline, but thanks, Ron. Anyway, he says, the miracle on the Hudson, so-called, is really a result of professional pilots organizing to ensure that they get the best support and training at the highest standards in the industry. Captain Sullenberger is a former safety chairman, accident investigator, and national committee member of the Airline Pilots Association. His work in safety with the ALPA led to the development of a federal aviation advisory circular. So the next time you see the scurrilous advertising that's out there right now by the opponents of the Employee Free Choice Act, remember, they're insulting union members like Captain Sullenberger. Just remember that, the sons of bitches. And the flight attendants, they had a pivotal role in getting their passengers to safety. You know, I hear a lot of people bitching about the attitude of flight attendants on, especially on some of the discount airways like U.S. Airways, like AirTran that I fly a lot. Well, they really don't care. Well, they, you know, they sit up in the flight attendants' quarters and read a magazine. Well, sure, why not? But when push comes to shove, these people really come through. And the people on that flight, the flight attendants, were members of the Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, Communications Workers of America. In a statement, the union president, Patricia Friend, said, quote, "We applaud our AFA CWA flight attendants for their professionalism in today's emergency water landing. Flight attendants are highly trained safety and security professionals, and today's successful evacuation is an overwhelming example of the necessary role flight attendants serve on board the aircraft. Flight attendants, thanks to their union, receive extensive training on emergency evacuations, and each year they undergo additional training to ensure their proficiency," unquote. So can you imagine now if flight attendants and pilots associations, I realize they work for corporations, but can you imagine if the Airline Pilots Association was broken up by a filthy president like the filthy Ronald Reagan did to the Air Traffic Controllers Union? Remember that? One of the first things he did when he became another one of these doddering, sick, old white men, right-wing Republican presidents. Yeah, I'm pissed off. Of course I am. Of course I am. You ever listen to the first 10 minutes of the show without hearing me getting pissed off? But this attack on union members, I don't care if they work in an auto plant or the Airline Pilots Association or, you know, some union connected with the wiring of the space shuttle. These are the people that are skilled and know what they're doing and do the best they can. There are circumstances that are way beyond their control. I understand that. But every time I hear some filthy right-wing Republican, I don't care if it's the pig man or his little parrot, Sean Hannity, or any of you people who send me your dumbass emails, you right-wingers, it doesn't make a difference. It just reminds me how many times you idiotic Republicans put your lives in the hands of people who are going to take care of your life because they happen to be a union member. And you know, why people don't understand that, these right-wingers, I don't know. I guess it's because their brains have been so saturated with misinformation, disinformation, and lies about what unions are about what they do. But this series of ads that's running right now with a name that is a complete 180 of what the ad is all about, freedom to unionize or something, being paid for in part, I'm sure, by the Chamber of Commerce, National Association of Manufacturers, people who do not want workers to unionize for the obvious reasons. Well, I give all of you the middle finger. You know, I sometimes think none of you pigs deserve to live, at least not in the same place I have to live. But then I think to myself, nah, you know, they're just ignorant, stupid people. So what are you going to do? Not too much. Ron in Briarwood wrote, "Mike, the plane that went into the Hudson today is an amazing story. The incredible skill of the pilot to be able to land safely on the water and the quick response by the ferry boat captains who were on the scene rescuing passengers within minutes. The quick evacuation by the flight attendants resulted in a potential tragedy being averted. To say it was a miracle would be to insult those who did their jobs with skill and courage. This was a triumph of the human spirit. Well done, Ron, Briarwood, New York." All right, stick around. We have no, I'm not going to play any sound from the jackass's speech tonight, but we will talk about it. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Rockers. Time to snuggle up with your favorite screamer, more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. I want to share something with you here. There's a guy who listens to this program in Buenos Aires, Argentina, or correct pronunciation, Argentina. His name is Hernan, and he set up something at YouTube. It's the Mike Malloy Gallery. He sent me an email, and he wants to know if there's any way I could mention it on the air. Okay. Now, all you have to do is go to YouTube, search YouTube for the Mike Malloy Gallery, and see what Hernan in Buenos Aires, who listens to this program via the Internet, or is it Sirius? I'm not sure. Or XM. I think it's the Internet. Check it out. It's interesting. We've had people in various parts of the world who listen to the program send all kinds of complimentary emails and stuff, and I really appreciate it. Don't talk about it too much on the air because you know me. But anyway, he asked me to mention this, so there you go. Just go to YouTube and search for the Mike Malloy Gallery, and it's from it's set up by a guy named Hernan, is that how you pronounce it, in Buenos Aires, Argentina. Check it out. And thanks, Hernan. Kind of interesting. our financial advisor, is that what we call Bruce? Economics advisor, Bruce Enberg. Prairie 2 writes in, hey, Mike, the long weekend ahead means bank seizures are likely, with Citibank considered a target. The big banks are whining that they need more TARP money or they'll fail, and we're too big to fail. It's becoming increasingly apparent that the reason the big banks aren't loaning out any of the TARP money they already have is that they are just using it to pay their own salaries. Unemployment claims jumped more than expected, what Pollyanna thought that wouldn't happen, with over 500,000 new claims last week alone. But, of course, nobody is counting all of those out of work who aren't eligible to file. China's exports, Prairie 2 writes, are down sharply, and with 700 million people there who have yet to share in the new prosperity, the problem of civil unrest is growing. In China, as millions of factory workers are forced back into hopeless poverty. This will likely result in some sort of dramatic upheaval somewhere between regime change and the total collapse of China as a functioning state. Oh, I don't think that last one's going to happen, Prairie 2, but okay. He goes on, U.S. companies that are tied to China will have their fortunes decline sharply, pulling the stock market down with them. 50% losses on the stock market is possible. If China slides into chaos, the lack of imports from there will make trade reform unnecessary in the short term, as long as we can survive the transition back to a manufacturing economy, us here in the United States. Republicans like Mitt Romney sold all our high-tech equipment to China and became billionaires. Now we get to start over, building factories like it's 1840. That's an interesting point I hadn't considered. If we can handle that, if things really are going to go to hell to the extent that they are, the potential. Latvia, I think, is the most recent country. I just read in the Times today they're having riots in Latvia. One of the three old Baltic republics because of the economic meltdown. Greece, you remember what happened in Greece a couple of weeks ago. Bulgaria is experiencing this. Riots and confrontations with the authorities because jobs are disappearing, credit is evaporating, and it's not just here that people are feeling the lash of their bankers and their credit grantors and so on and so forth. It really is a global recession. There's no question about that. I hope that doesn't occur in this country, and frankly, I hope it doesn't occur someplace like China. China is already potentially a war-making country because of the fact that they have such an inordinate number speaking in terms of ratio, of males to females. And when you have a society like that, where the number of males greatly outnumber the females, which limits, this is pure biology, limits the choices that the males have for mating, reproduction, so on and so forth, then you have a country that, if for no other reason than that, will seek to conquer, will initiate wars. This is so old it's got a beard on it. I'm sure most of you are familiar with this theory. But if you couple that with a financial meltdown in a country like China, the potential for chaos is very, very, very scary. All right, I'm going to talk about, we're not playing any of the sound, so you don't have to get out your earplugs or, you know, switch to something else. We'll talk a little bit about Bush's final address tonight. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
If you listen to any of Bush's farewell address tonight, you didn't hear anything that rests in a rational world at all. It was. I listened to a little bit of it. I didn't need to. I had gotten an advanced copy and read it earlier today and just about lost my lunch. But some of the things he said, I think really underscore, you know, dot the T's or dot the I's, cross the T's, where it concerns this man's total disconnect from reality. There's no doubt about that. I mean, there hasn't been since the first time he opened his mouth as governor of Texas. But it's just unbelievable. I have this fantasy of somebody going up to him and grabbing him and sitting him down in a chair and forcing him to sit there, much like the way we torture people at Guantanamo, and force him to listen to the truth of things and then to listen to his interpretation of things and force him to confront the truth. Now, I realize with certain sociopathic personalities, you can't do that. You can confront them with the truth every moment that they're awake, and they still can't process the truth. Especially people who are deeply invested in their own neuroses, where whether it's their fault or not is immaterial. If they're really on the verge of craziness, like Bush is, but still able to operate. You know, you can't get to them, because the proof of the rightness of what they're doing is the fact that they can operate every day, the proof to them. Even though they may be leaving a trail of death and destruction in the case of Bush, who was going to go up to the king, Bush, and tell him, you are committing mass murder? I mean, who among his group of advisors, who among his critics? Jesus Christ, they had to tell Paul Krugman at the New York Times he couldn't refer to Bush as a liar. That's how crazy we are in this country. Oh, you can't call him a liar in print, Paul. Why? He is a liar. Yeah, but you can't do it. One of the reasons I parted from WLS in Chicago had to do with that very issue before Bush was even elected. I forget, what was the term? Do you remember the term I was using for him?
First, I need to correct you that Bush was never elected. But
okay.
Selected. You can put an S in front of it. The term, you just used to call him W a lot. And
I never called him. There was a term that was pejorative that I used. And I forget what it was. But the manager of the station said, you can't do that. And I said, why? He's a citizen. Limbaugh, who's on the station, slices and dices people every day, referring to women as feminazis. And the program director, Mike Elder, said, well, you're not Limbaugh. And when I left that meeting, I just thought, another punk-ass radio, mid-level radio manager who just doesn't get it. Just doesn't get it. Oh, well. But it's been very clear for a very long period of time that this man was totally delusional. I think he's gotten worse and worse and worse. The more a power accrued to him through the theft of the office of the presidency on two occasions, back to back, the more power that he thought he had, and he did have, although he was just completely manipulated by evil sons of bitches like Dick Cheney or Paul Wolfowitz or the list. I'm not going to go down the list. But his madness, the madness of King George, increased exponentially as he thought he had more power. And he did have more power. And some of that power was granted to him by Democratic morons in the House and the Senate who always, their fallback position was, well, when we signed on to the declaration of using force against Iraq, we never thought it would be used. Well, you dumb bastards, why did you sign on to it? What was the point? See, I mean, that kind of stuff. So Bush had enablers, not just in his inner circle, not just in the Republican Party, but in the Democratic Party, too. All sorts of enablers. And the country is going to pay and pay and pay and pay for this for the foreseeable future. But there he was tonight, acting as though he had provided leadership, talking into the camera as though 80% of the people in this country think he's a moron. 80% around the world think he's a mass killer and a war criminal. And if justice is to prevail, he will be captured and tried as a war criminal. But there he was looking in the camera, talking as though, there have been some rough patches in my ears, but, bottom line, all things being said and done, we did a pretty good job. He said, here's some quotes. He said, tonight I'm filled with gratitude to Vice President Cheney and members of the administration. Above all, I thank the American people for the trust you've given me. I thank you for the prayers that have lifted my spirits. And I thank you for the countless acts of courage, generosity, and grace that I've witnessed these past 8 years. The toxicity of this man, it just oozes. It leaks out of every one of his pores. You son of a bitch, you weren't the king. I know you thought you were. I know Dick Cheney and the rest of the manipulators who used you like a, like a used Kleenex, just constantly made you think it was about you, but it wasn't. And then he references, he was only on the air for what, 2 minutes, and he makes his first reference to the terror attacks, September 11, 2001. He said, this evening my thoughts return to the first night I address you from this house, September 11, 2001, yada, 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 yada. Which was his fault! He allowed it to happen! He talks about that as though it were some event that occurred in a parallel universe and somebody inadvertently broke the time-space continuum and that leaked over into us and he had to respond. No, George, that's not what happened. You caused it with your ineptitude, your inability to use rational thought in assessing problems, in making decisions, in going back and correcting something that you may have decided was the proper course and then realize it is not the proper course. Bush's claim that, I've stuck by my principles, those weren't principles. Those were the hardcore calcified ideas of someone who is psychologically incapable of realizing that he's going down the wrong path. And if people die and are maimed and wounded and blood's flying all over the room and body parts are streaming down from hell, he doesn't care. He doesn't care. I stuck to my principles. Good. He says, as the years passed, most Americans were able to return to life much as it had been before 9/11, but I never did. There's no point in even commenting on that line. He went on to say, for 8 years, we have strived to expand opportunity and hope here at home. You have? How have you done that, you son of a bitch? You have taken us to the brink of catastrophic economic disaster. I don't get that. He says, across our country, students are rising to meet higher standards in public schools. No, they're not, George. Are you totally insane? The schools are overcrowded. They're underfunded. There's no money. They're trying to bring in trailers. The textbooks are outdated. Your religious jerk-ass compadres are trying to ram creation science, so-called, down the throats of students. What are you talking about? Higher standards in public schools. He talks about a new Medicare prescription drug benefit bringing peace of mind to seniors and the disabled. Really? Is that the Medicare prescription plan that takes people up to a certain point and then abandons them for months and then they can pick it up again on the other side of the so-called donut? Is that the prescription plan that by law prevented any sort of competitiveness where it concerned the prices of these drugs to an enormous payoff to your friends in the pharmaceutical business? Benefit to seniors. Okay. Every taxpayer pays lower income taxes. The addicted and suffering are finding new hope through faith-based programs. No. The suffering are seeing their supplies of medical marijuana being destroyed by raids from your goddamn Gestapo, people who desperately need this weed to ease their pain and suffering, are finding out that the providers of this are being jailed. He's insane. Vulnerable human life is being protected, is better protected. Where? What do you talk about, vulnerable human life? Every strand of the social safety net has been cut by this son of a bitch and these filthy Republicans. So how can he say this? How can he say? Well, you can say it if you're delusional. And then he says, when challenge to our prosperity emerged, we rose to meet them. Facing the prospect of a financial collapse, we took decisive measures to safeguard the economy. There's no point in commenting on that. It is so far outside the realm of reason or logic or observation, just observation, to render it the gibbering of somebody sitting in a seclusion room in a mental institution, all wrapped up in a straitjacket.
He's the primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
It's about 9 before the hour. Back to Chuckle Nuts tonight. the bit about when challenges to our prosperity emerged. Don't you like the passive voice being used there? No, it wasn't challenges to our prosperity emerging. It was the way Bush and the Republican Party have absolutely decimated this economy. He says, we rose to meet those challenges. He goes on to say, facing the prospect of a financial collapse, we took decisive measures to safeguard our economy. Again, what does that mean? What decisive measures to safeguard the economy? These bandits, outlaws, bastards have destroyed the measures that were in place to safeguard the economy. The regulations that are absolutely necessary to prevent capitalism from devouring everything in its sight, which it will do. It is a merciless, murderous, warmongering, destructive economic system. And the only way you can prevent it from doing all that is to have a regulatory system that is powerful, that includes fines and jail time for the people who violate it. All that's gone. There's no regulatory ropes around this monster at all. So when Bush says we took measures to safeguard our economy, what the hell is he talking about? He says the toll would be far worse if we had not acted. In doing what? Giving $700 billion to the swinish financial banking industry that has destroyed us? Is that it? That's it. He says all Americans are in this together. No, we're not, George. You're not in this. Cheney's not in it. The elites in this country are not in it. What the hell are you talking about? And together, with determination and hard work, we will restore our economy to the path of growth. It's nonsense. It's gibberish. Thank God this son of a bitch is on his way out. And then when he says, while our nation is safer than it was 7 years ago, the gravest threat to our people remains another terrorist attack. Our enemies are patient and determined to strike again. America did nothing to seek or deserve this conflict. What? What? The purveyor of terrorism on this earth to a greater extent than any other country has been, for the past 50 years, us. Whether it was in Southeast Asia, Africa, Central America, South Asia, Eastern Europe, come on. Come on. The nation is not safer than it was 7 years ago. We are probably in a more dangerous period here in the United States than ever before, even greater than on September 10th, 2001. The only saving grace is that this son of a bitch and his thugs will be out of office. That's the only thing that we have going for us right now. Other than that, George Bush and his enablers have made this country more vulnerable than it's ever been in its history. You want to argue with that? Go ahead. Send me an email. Call me up. Tell me. You tell me when we've been more vulnerable on a global basis, whether it is militarily, financially, you know, economically, on any level, in terms of education. When have we ever been more vulnerable? Thanks to the past 8 years from this monstrous little twit. And he goes on and says, we see America's character in Dr. Tony Somebody, a principal who opened a new charter school from the ruins of Hurricane Katrina. From the ruins of Hurricane Katrina. How does this bastard even mention that? Even mention Hurricane Katrina without his God reaching out of the clouds and just wringing his neck? How does he do that? How can he mention Hurricane Katrina? The man who led the government that allowed tens of thousands of people to go down the toilet. And they're still suffering. And will continue. Oh my God. It goes on. But I'm not going to go on with any more of this. We'll have to see him again on Tuesday when he's standing in the swearing-in ceremony of Barack Obama. Say what you want about Barack Obama. He's not George Bush. And that's not damning with faint praise by any any means. It is just a very clear truth. The leadership of this country is going to pass out of the hands of an incompetent, sociopathic criminal and his enablers and the people who manipulated Bush. Of course, Bush was willing to be manipulated. I get to play president. Ooh, I get to order people dead. Ooh, I get to fly onto the deck of an aircraft carrier. Ooh, I get to fly around the country. Ooh, I have all this power. Hey, how about this, Pickles? I have all this power. Ew. I bet Dad liked that. Oh, don't mention Dad. I don't want to hear. I want to talk about Dad. Don't talk about Dad. And he's going. I know a lot of people, that's a real surprise. Over the past 2 years, certainly the past 2 years, all the emails I've gotten about, well, Malloy, what makes you think he's going to leave office? Okay, we've got till Tuesday, but thank God he's leaving. Welcome back. 6:30 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program. Bill writes in, Mike, Bush had that airhead, arrogant, stuporous Alfred E. Newman smirk smile on his face tonight. My rage was trumped only by my disbelief at the nerve of this murderous shell of a moron. I couldn't believe he dredged up and wore that idiotic look on his face as his final image before a country which would lock him up for life if it could. He is insane. Goodbye, George W. Bush. May you suffer in a hell on earth for the rest of your days. Well, he did unite the country. He said he was a uniter, not a divider. The only people who still support him or his policies are really terminally brain dead. Oh, well. Regarding the economy and capitalism, Andre sent this in. Dell is letting go of 1,000-plus jobs in Ireland, you know, one of the Celtic tigers, Ireland, that went from being the so-called poor man of Europe into being probably the most, having the most vibrant economy during the the 90s. Anyway, Dell Computers is eliminating 1,000-plus jobs in Ireland, shipping them to Eastern Europe. To, Andre writes, you know, satisfy their shareholders or bottom line or whatever the terms are. Yeah, and that, of course, is the nature of globalization. This is where Ross Perot certainly was right, wasn't he? Huh? Remember that? Everybody laughed at him when he talked about that giant sucking sound. Well, I want you to hear something. This is a former captain in the Israeli Air Force. His name is Yonatan Shapira. Yonatan, is that how you pronounce it? He was speaking to the BBC reporter about 10 days ago. And this is another one of those examples of the stuff we don't hear in this country. We're not allowed to hear unless you listen to BBC. This is at YouTube. Excuse me, which is where we got it. Somebody sent me the link. But listen to former Israeli Air Force Captain Yonatan Shapira speaking to the BBC about 10 days ago, shortly after the, about a week after the invasion of Gaza.
I mean, in terms of what's going on now, what's your assessment of what Israel is doing in Gaza?
I can answer you with two words, a war crime. My government is now engaged in a massive war crime, killing hundreds of innocents. It's not just a war crime against the Palestinians, it's a crime against the Israeli people. And on behalf of thousands of Israelis that are demonstrating right now in the streets of Tel Aviv, in Jerusalem, and in many other places, with Palestinians, with internationals, people from all kind of background and all parts of the Israeli society are completely, completely ashamed and against this crazy assault. We know that you cannot kill, as Jewish people, we know that you cannot kill the desire of people to be free. As a Jewish person that was raised on all these values of liberation and humanity and freedom, we cannot kill the desire of the Palestinian people to live in freedom. And on behalf of those people in Israel and in the world, I want to call the international community, the Jewish community in the world, and everyone that listen to me now, please join our force to stop this massive killing. Please, for the sake of Israel, for the sake of Palestine, and for the sake of the world, I want to cry and to shout and ask you, people are dying right now. The rockets, by the way, can kill also me and my parents when we work in the south, not far from Gaza. But it's crazy that my government, at the same time that people are being killed on our side, is continuing this crazy assault, thinking that they can kill the desire of millions of people to be free.
But the argument, your government has, Tzvi Livni, was saying that it's extremists responsible, a small number granted, but every rocket that's fired out of Gaza into Israel must be stopped, and this is an act of defense.
Yeah, and the Palestinians will say the same thing, that this is an act of defense. They are being trapped in this open-air prison for decades, and they cannot eat, they cannot have medicine, they cannot go in, they cannot go out. We lock them there in a big ghetto, and we have to put the words in a very clear context. We are locking this 1.5 million people for so long, and we treat them as animals, and this is the result.
We treat them as animals. Gaza, an open-air prison. No food, no medicine, no clean water. Yonatan Shapira. Let me see how many emails I can get now saying, oh yeah, well, he's just a self-hating Jew. What does he know? And that was 10 days ago. 10 days ago.
I want someone to explain to me how Israel justifies using white phosphorus in an area as crowded as Gaza. I really would, because I remember one of the things that, you know, thanks George W., one of the most horrifying things I ever saw was a series of photographs that still haunt me. It was like 4 years ago maybe I saw them.
Battle of Fallujah in Iraq, when we used it.
When we used it in Iraq, and someone sent me graphic pictures mm-hmm. of people where this stuff had touched their skin, and it doesn't stop burning until it reaches the bone, and it kills you. And there's no way to survive it, and it kills you on contact, and it kills you slowly, and it burns through your skin all the way down to the bone until you're dead, and it's an excruciatingly painful way to die. And, you know, the justification for using this to me is insanity. But using it in a crowded city and then saying, oops, oh, God, did we do that? Did we throw that into the UN? I am so sorry. That was an error. There's no way you mistakenly release white phosphorus. There's no way it can be a mistake.
Well, I wish I had an answer. But the only answer I have is the Israelis are using the same rationale in Gaza City that we used in Fallujah. There's no difference. And when people want to know why they, being the Muslim world or the Arab world, why they hate us, That possibly is an answer. Now, there may be some thread running through Islam that denigrates the so-called infidel, just as there is in Christianity. A very basis of Christianity is that everybody else is condemned to hell. Jew, Muslim, Buddhist, everybody is condemned to hell, except those who accept Jesus Christ as their Redeemer. You know, we don't talk about that. They're condemned to hell. The Israeli or the Jews have their own version of exclusivity. They, in their minds, are God's chosen people. So you see, it matters not if it's Muslim, Jew, or Christian. This attitude of, I'm all right, Jack, your ass is going to burn in hell, or it's going to burn here, but it's going to burn, is insanity. It's just pure religious insanity. It's crazy, and that's what makes people die. That's what makes nations go to war. It's what builds hatred. Religion builds hatred. Someone, cite me an example, an historical example of an ongoing situation where hatred has not been engendered among religions. Give me an example. I'm wide open, wide open. But I have been unable to find anything. I took a couple of courses in comparative religion, not much, just enough to whet my appetite to do individual or research or studies, you know, just my own little life track. You know, this is, since I am not a college graduate, I've had to educate myself as I go along. So, you know, I understand a bit, not as much as a scholar, but certainly enough to sustain me the complete realization that religion is murderous, always has been, always will be, is right now.
Child laid in the stall at night, safe in the glow of his dark light. How strange to choose to end a life. How strange to choose to kill a child. Hoover, Blaupunkt, Nissan, Jeep, Nike, Adidas, Lacoste, and cheaper brands. Cadillac, Amtrak, gasoline, diesel, a standard of living. Could this be the reason
that we were choosing to kill?
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
And a flag on your car, and a ribbon on your mailbox, with the stars and bars. Do you support the president and the war for oil? Do you think the sun's the law there on someone else's soil? How far is it from here to Nuremberg?
Twenty-one past the hour. I got a couple of emails here from people who apparently, my fault, I'm sure, misunderstood what I meant about religion. There have been people who are subscribers to certain religions who've done enormous good, individual good, good that would have been done from a humanistic standpoint, you know, without the God stuff in it. What I was trying to say was that anytime you have two religions come in contact with each other, two religions that are specific in their definitions of justice, life, death, reward systems, punishments, what constitutes someone who is seen favorably by their God and someone who is not seen favorably. When you have that situation, as far as my reading of history goes, at any time, eventually it results in bloodshed, massive, murderous bloodshed. I mean the kind of bloodshed that is almost unspeakable, because it's being done in the name of God. Therefore, it's done, no matter what is done, it's done with the blessings of this cloud being whom these people, whoever these people are, worship. So that was my point. This is from Joel Weisberg. Subject line, a Jew supports Mike. Joel writes, Mike, I've written you once before regarding the Jewish neocons. My point was that they are an extreme minority among my people. I'm writing again today as a founding member of Nova M since you moved over there to offer my complete support in your just and fair criticism of the horrendous actions being taken against the civilian population of Gaza by the Israeli military. It's even being reported that the IDF is packing white phosphorus into their shells. They are learning some of Bush's dirtiest tricks. Israel complains that the Palestinians fire their guns among civilians. All of Gaza is packed with civilians. What do they want them to do? Go into an open field and wave their arms and ask to be bombed? As they did in Lebanon, they, the Israelis, are killing innocent men, women, and children, and I protest hugely. My Jewish people should know the value of life. They have suffered so much. That is why it is so damn difficult to see the carnage they are causing. I condemn the miserable Bush administration for a complete cessation of diplomacy in the last 8 years, a failure which was sure to bring about these tragic results. Once again, Mike, I encourage you to keep speaking from your heart. As a Jew, you have my complete support. I've been a fan since the Chicago days and will remain so. Thanks, Joel. All right, phone calls? You want to do that? You want to do that now? Oh, nobody's there. All right, well, to hell with it. Let's go home. You want to go home? Oh, that's right. We are home. Does anybody want to say anything tonight on the program? The number is 800-989-1480. A U.S. Foreign Intelligence Court, a FISA court, released a ruling today that upholds the right of the President and Congress to wiretap private international phone conversations and intercept email messages without a court-issued warrant. The FISA court said that that's legal. How about taking it to the Supreme Court? What the hell is a FISA court? FISA court is a construct. The FISA court, in fact, was put together after those Senator Church's hearings that we talked about back in the 70s. When an out-of-control CIA and FBI and NSA were doing domestic spying in complete contravention of the U.S. Constitution. So the FISA Act was passed in order to protect individual privacy and freedom in this country, at the same time to give investigative agencies who might be looking for the bad guys among us the power to do certain things if, like spying on Americans, if they could show a court why it was necessary. And, of course, Bush trashed that. Bush said, oh, no, we don't need that. When I say Bush, I'm using it as a collective noun because Bush had really nothing to do with it except to sign the orders necessary, the executive orders. It was John Yoo. It was, what was his name? Vin. It was Wolfowitz. It was all these thugs and murderers and killers who operated with Bush who decided, no, we don't need to do that. The FISA court released an unclassified version of an August 2008 ruling that seems to validate Bush's claim that the government can act without court orders in gathering foreign intelligence. But that's not really what the complaints were about, was it? It wasn't about domestic spying. Remember, the Bush crime family got this heated criticism about 3 years ago when the National Security Agency's program for warrantless eavesdropping was revealed. That was in the New York Times. Was it New York Times? And how many Republican members of Congress suggested that New York Times editor be put on trial for treason? Remember that? Jesus Christ. We'll be right back. Secret agent tax for the wealthy, leave another poor behind. I am the egghead. I'm the commander. I'm the decider. Cuckoo. I'm the decider, and I decide what is best, and what's best is for Don Rumsfeld to remain as the Secretary of Defense. Sitting in a White House garden, talking to the Lord. But my thoughts would be busy, busy hatching if I only had a brain.
Liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's More Mike Malloy.
another quickie here from Eric, who writes in, the subject line says insane asylum. He writes, Mike, a woman in Green Bay, Wisconsin, who was able to pass for her teenage daughter and enroll in high school, has been sentenced to 3 years in a mental institution instead of prison. She was only caught after making the cheerleader squad and then bouncing a $65 check to the coach to pay for her uniform. 3 years in a mental institution, and President Chucklenuts not only goes free, but he gets a pension and full benefits, an office, and Secret Service protection. We are in the insane asylum. Yeah, of course. Well, you know, what about the doctors and the medical practitioners who handle these marijuana, what do they call it, Kathy, clinics? People who go, primarily on the West Coast, people who go in for their joint, the bag of weed, whatever, for medically definable reasons. And the people that provide this kind of support to folks who are dealing with intractable pain or unbelievable nausea brought about by cancer, AIDS, whatever, the people who are providing, even though the states have ruled this is legal, they are being harassed and jailed, fined, by Bush's SS. There's no reason for this. The one thing that Obama needs to do, the one thing, Jesus, one of the things in the list of hundreds that Obama needs to do as quickly as possible is to declare an absolute moratorium on the harassment of these clinics. And if somebody is sneaking in and getting a free joint now and then, who cares? Jesus, God, who cares? Who said it better than better than 1,000 criminals go free than one innocent man go to prison? I'm totally garbled that, but you know what I'm saying. And that's what this amounts to. So if somebody fakes a prescription and gets a bag of reefer, ooh, oh, ee, ike, yikes. But I was talking to a friend today who suggested just that. One of the things that Barack Obama needs to do early on is to bring that little corner of madness to an end. And I agree. Let's go to your phone calls. Who do we have here? How about Jan? Excuse me. Jan is calling from Madison, Wisconsin, listening on the internet.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, Jan.
I called to say you were right. A while back, I talked to you about having a Republican friend or two, and you said, I don't know how you can do that. And I was thinking, well, because this guy's different. And I called to tell you that you were right, and I was wrong, because he's not.
What happened?
Well, back in August, he attempted to hand me an article by Camille Paglia, I can't stand.
Right.
Defending Sarah Palin as a feminist, which... You can read the article. It's hilarious.
Yeah, I'm snickering now because I think somebody did send me that some time ago, but I've totally forgotten it. But Sarah Palin is a feminist to the same extent that I'm a conservative Republican.
And I'm a supermodel.
Yeah, there you go.
Right. So I handed it back to him and said no thanks and walked away and. It happened to be a busy night, and we were both working, and I just said, no, thanks. And he took offense at that, so he stopped talking to me for months. And I finally said, well, let me, you know, I'd forgotten that incident, and I finally emailed him and said, okay, what did I do?
Right.
And I got this very manipulative and political diatribe from him in which he claimed that he's trying to be bipartisan and open-minded and wishes that, you know, people like me would be so, and it was a lot of blather, and I sent him an email back saying I like Camille Paglia and Sarah Palin is not a feminist.
Mm-hmm.
She represents everything that I find wrong with America, and I told him I was kind of tired of hearing all this stuff, and that's mm-hmm. why I didn't want to read it. And I got an even more vituperative reply back to, from him. And you know what? You said this at some point in your show months ago about how the right uses what they take whatever is wrong with them and they apply it to their enemies.
Yeah, project it, right? Projection.
Yeah,
one of the oldest tricks in the DSM-4. You know, it's not me that's crazy. It's you because of this. But,
right.
Right.
He said I was as fanatical as the religious right, which I thought was funny, and you know claimed a bunch of other things that I was closed-minded and that I wanted a totalitarian state. And, you know, that's all the things that his ilk are guilty of, he was accusing me. And at the very end, he told me to extract my head from a certain portion of my anatomy.
Mm.
And I had never, ever, in all the time that I'd known him, and I've known him a number of years, and we've been friendly that number of years, never have had a personal attack like that from him. And I said to another friend of mine, I said, it was kind of like knowing somebody for years, thinking you really know them, and then they rip this mask off, and you find out they're one of the lizard aliens from Eden. You know, it was so startling and so repulsive that the only thing I could reply to him was, "I'm sorry you feel that way. Have a good life." And I didn't attempt to argue because I realized that who I was now dealing with. So I'm eating a little crow here, Mike. You were right.
Well, no, don't look at it that way. Not at all. I mean, that's happened to me, too. That's one of the reasons in the past, my experience that way goes back to the Reagan years, but that's one of the reasons why in the past 20 years, I'm very difficult to make friends with new people. It may be a function of getting older, but it's very difficult because I had friends, plural, like that, like exactly what you're describing back in the age of Reagan and Bush One. And I had my break with them during the horror of Iran-Contra and the horror of the First Intifada. And, you know, people that I had known, like you knew this guy for a number of years and felt like you knew them. And, yeah, I know that feeling when the mask comes off and you're staring right in the face of one of the lizard people. It's really scary business. So since that time, I've just been very, very, very cautious. I'll bet you in the past 20 years, I haven't made more than, what, Kathy, 2 or 3 new friends. That's about it. New friends. That's just been the way it goes. Hey, thanks a lot. I appreciate you calling, Jan. Take care, okay?
Thank you, Mike.
All right. Good to hear from you.
And that miniseries that became a TV series, V, that she's referring to back in the 80s, I mean, totally, totally ahead of its time. It was just prescient about the neocons that were coming.
Right.
And it was good prep. You know, the problem is today we don't have all the cool weapons to go rip their lizard faces off with. But it was very, prophetic.
Ari Shavit. Writing, he is a Haaretz newspaper correspondent in Israel. I've quoted his stuff extensively on this program. He writes, today, on Thursday it happened. It's Friday in Israel. On Thursday it happened, conclusively, Operation Cast Lead turned insane. That's the name of the invasion of Gaza. Attacking any densely populated city is a serious act at any time, but when Israel's international legitimacy is being ground to dust, such an attack is nothing but madness. Shelling a United Nations facility is something not to be done at any time, but doing it on the day when the UN Secretary General is visiting Jerusalem is beyond lunacy. The level of pressure the Israeli Defense Forces has been exerting on Gaza may be squeezing Hamas, but it is destroying Israel. Destroying its soul and its image, destroying it on world television screens, in the living rooms of the international community, and most importantly, in Barack Obama's America. Israel is not Russia, and Gaza is not Chechnya. Israel cannot deal with its enemies the way belligerent superpowers deal with theirs. War must be just and proportional. Without being just, Israel cannot triumph on the battlefield. Without a sound moral foundation, any Israeli victory is Pyrrhic. 21 days ago, the campaign against Hamas was balanced and right. About a week ago, it started slipping, and in the last few days, it has crossed every line. True, Hamas is in distress, its leaders are being killed, its prestige is dwindling, but this cannot change the fact that what began as a vital, calculated military operation has become a riotous rampage in a populated area. At any given moment, the rampage could end in disaster. The Israeli Prime Minister has apparently decided to act like some kind of Putin. If he ended his first war with no clear conclusion, he will end his second one with a scorched earth. But one should also ask, where is Defense Minister Ehud Barak, who is supposed to look truth in the eye, quote, quote, in his election campaign? And where is Foreign Minister Tzipi Livni, who claims to have the courage to change things? After 2 weeks of serving their state, they are now in cahoots with licentious military moves. In a few days, the fire will cease and the fog will disperse, revealing the horror. Hamas will be crushed, but pictures of outrageous destruction and killing will flood the world. Beirut's waltz with Bashir will pale by comparison to Gaza's waltz with Olmert. Then we'll discover that we will not be paying the price of the past week's belligerent escapade only in Obama's America. We will be paying it with the damaged souls of our sons and daughters. From Haaretz, Ari Shavit.
Got the flying monkey right blues? Here's the cure, Mike Malloy.
It is 9 minutes before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Bill is calling from Nashville, Tennessee, listening on Sirius. Bill, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My original point was Hamas kept violating the ceasefire by firing rockets into Israel. And when Israel finally gets sick of it and begins to mop the floor with them, everybody's all up in arms. Why is it that liberals are so ready to defend these animals that hide behind their women and children and would cut your throat if given half a chance?
Well, I could answer by giving you a question. Why is it that I won't say conservatives, you, because most conservatives hate what's going on, but you seem to think it's okay. Why do you think it's okay to massacre 300 children in order to make a point that you are not going to tolerate Hamas? Rather than sitting down and working out a solution, why do you feel it's okay to kill children? Do you have children?
Yes, I do.
What would happen if somebody started sending missiles into your house and killing your children? What would you do? No, wait. I'm going to give you a chance.
Okay.
To handle a conversation like an adult, which no conservative or Republican has ever done on my program in 24 years. So if you can pull it off, Bill, you will have set a record. Now I'm going to ask you again. supposing some people that you didn't like were sending rockets into your city and killing your children, what would you do?
I would react in kind.
Which means what?
I would target the ones who were doing it. but it's kind of hard to...
No, wait. Now stop. Slow down.
Okay.
Who is Israel targeting?
Hamas.
How many Hamas fighters have they killed?
I really don't know.
How many children? How many children have they killed? 300. As of yesterday, Bill, 312. Do you think that's okay?
No, that's not okay.
Okay, then. Then what are you telling me? Why are you telling me that it's okay for Israel to mop the floor with them? What is being used as detergent, Bill, as they mop the floor? Children's blood. Is that okay with you?
No, that's not okay with me.
Ask you another question. How many Israeli children have been killed by Hamas?
I don't know.
Okay. Bill, I just need to tell you that there's no reason for us to continue the conversation. Let's move on. I appreciate you calling in, but you don't know what the hell you're talking about. You really, really don't. I've kind of got a rule on this program, and that is if you want to talk about the issue of this horror in the Middle East, you've got to display to me that you have at least a basic understanding of what's going on. And this guy didn't. And 99% of the people who called the only people that have a basic, I'm not saying correct or proper, but a basic understanding of what's going on are the Jews that call this program to defend the position of Israel. That's it. Anybody else who calls this program, Americans who call this program, with the kind of snotty, chin-thrust-out attitude that butchering 300 children. You know, I have on the program tonight a former Israeli Air Force captain who says what he said, if you were listening. Then a writer for Haaretz saying what he says. And then I get this jerky screwball from Tennessee calling me up and talking like, well, yeah, it's okay to kill children. Goddamn right it is. It's insane. How many Israelis, period, have been killed by these rockets fired at them by Hamas? Everything I read from the press in Israel, 15 in the past 5 years. Okay, that's 15 too goddamn many. But the Israelis have killed that many innocent Palestinians since the beginning of the past hour. I'm not defending death. Whose death is more important, Jews or Muslims, Palestinians or Israelis? That's a fool's game, and that's what this jerk that just called me was playing. I don't play that. Any of these deaths are horrifying. The dumbass, right away, they always say, well, you liberals, don't call this program anymore. I always put the word out. If anybody can call in here and make a coherent, cogent case for any issue, the Israeli-Palestinian horror or the economy or anything, and you call yourself a Republican or conservative, have at it. And so far, never, not in 22 years, have I ever heard anyone on the right make a coherent statement. It's like shooting fish in a barrel, what they're doing. You ever heard of proportionality, Bill?
Story in your eyes, it's been shining down, falling down,
Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy Program on Nova M. The phone number here is 800-989-1480. If you prefer, I can play Bush's farewell speech because we still have 3 open lines here. So it's it's up to you. Either make the sacrifice of calling in, because I would like to hear what you've got to say tonight. Or be prepared to hear Bush, which will make you change stations, which you don't want to do. Right? You don't want to do that. We haven't gotten a whole lot of comment about the situation in Gaza. Or for that matter, the economy. We got a report here in Georgia today. 148,000 people in the month of December have applied for unemployment comp, and that sets a record. It is 147% of the same figure a year ago at this time, but which was bad enough. But it also indicates that Georgia, like most states in the country, is just spiraling down into who knows what. I haven't paid too much attention to the story yet, but Arnold Schwarzenegger, the governor of California, is making it very clear that California is about to go belly up. I mean, it's astonishing. Were we as a people that profligate in our spending, that irresponsible, that willing to go in debt, answer to this is obvious, to the extent that we now have everything crashing down around our shoulders, what's going to happen when certain health insurance companies start declaring that they're going bankrupt? What's going to happen with that? But school systems, emergency medical services, here in the Atlanta area, they're closing fire station after fire station that provides emergency medical care for people, the EMTs that come out when there's not just an accident, but when there's an incident at home, a heart attack, a stroke, somebody falls and breaks a leg, a child is run over or hurts himself or herself at home. All of this stuff is close. How did we get so far, so close to the edge that we appear to be just plunging into the abyss right now? What the hell happened? I didn't know that we were in that bad of shape. I can remember reading the stories that it was a couple of years ago. It was written that the U.S. as a whole had finally reached a negative savings rate. I've never had a lot of savings at all. I just haven't, a few thousand dollars in the bank in case of an emergency. Since I've been married to Kathy, of course, she's changed all that. She's better at doing that kind of stuff, making sure that there is a little bit of a cushion in case, being in this business, you never know how long you're going to be employed. But prior to that, I never paid that much attention to it. It was just, which sounds like I've been irresponsible as hell. Well, not really, but I just didn't pay that much attention to something like where we were as a country, where I was as an individual in terms of savings or borrowing. I've never been a big borrower either. But all of a sudden, here we are. And since I'm not sure how I fit into this, the rest of it just comes as a shock. You understand what I'm saying? It's just a shock. What? All this stuff is failing? And it's because a few people made loans on houses that they couldn't afford. I realize that's reducing it to the idiocy of total simplicity, like what a Republican would do. But, that's what it sounded like to me a few months ago when it became clear that what Krugman and a lot of people had been warning about over and over and over and over again, that this can't continue. It can't continue. And I used to think at the time, it can't continue. What? We didn't buy a house that was overinflated. We didn't take out a mortgage that it's impossible to handle on the kind of income that we have. We have very reasonable mortgage, very reasonable interest rate. Of course, we deal with a credit union, not a bank. So, unable to really apply this in my own life, only to the extent that I've been in those positions before, but it's difficult for me to comprehend how this country is just seems to be on a roller coaster into a depression. You know, I keep hearing about this. My parents and grandparents used to tell me what the depression was like back in the day. Oh, Jesus, really? And I read about it as a kid in school and so on and so forth. And now I hear that, you know, we could be heading for that again. And it just doesn't compute. Wait a second. This is the United States of America. How could this be? And I know. I've seen all the manufacturing jobs leave. I've seen plant after plant closed, retirement funds stolen, investment companies going belly up, leaving people completely vulnerable and naked to whatever might happen now that they're in their 60s or even 70s. I understand, but how did it happen? That's a part that I can't understand. Kathy said to me today, what is the IDF trying to accomplish going into Gaza? And I said, well, to defeat Hamas. And that answer wasn't good enough. And she said, well, then, why are they bombing the UN? Why are they using white phosphorus? Why are they doing this and doing that? You know, I don't have any answers. I've made it clear, and neither does she. We kind of ask these questions of each other rhetorically. But I made it clear about this program. There are no answers here. There's just discussion and more questions. That's all. Just more questions. Endless questions. Never any answers. But this economic thing, I still don't quite get it. How can the state of California be on the verge of a total collapse? How can the state of Georgia have 148,000 new applicants last month for unemployment comp? What happened? Has it been so bad? Have we really all this so-called prosperity that we in this country thought we had going back to probably not, there was a recession in 92 because of another Bush. And then Clinton came in and immediately raised taxes and the whole economy took off like a rocket. You know, regardless of what Republicans say, screw Republicans. You know, oh, you raise taxes, it murders the economy. No, it doesn't. But anyway, starting about 93, so what, 15 years ago, it's just been the longest economic expansion. You remember that? Right towards the end of the Clinton years, the longest, most powerful economic expansion in the history of this country. It was all smoke and mirrors. It was all based on borrowed money. It was all based on extensions of credit to a degree that never should have happened, whether it was credit to this country so we could go wage wars or individual credit so we could hang ourselves eventually. So apparently that was it. Was it? I guess. I don't know. Does anybody know? I really don't. All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll take some phone calls. If anybody wants to chat, if you don't want to chat, I understand. But apparently a few do now, so stick around. As soon as we come back after this break, bingo, right to the calls. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Strikes across the frontier and strikes for higher wage. Planet lurches to the right as ideologies engage. Suddenly it's repression, moratorium. Panic would invite. Personal speech shrugs. Security comes first. But you don't always know what it always gets worse. Trouble with normal. It always gets worse. We'll all go back to normal if we put our nation first. But trouble.
Hey, truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, more of Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. All right, write your phone calls. Bill is calling from New York, listening, I guess, on the Internet. Hey, Bill, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, we're doing fine here. Got two issues. One is I want to thank you for your promotion of fingersalutetobush.org. We're making good headway, and I'll talk about that in a second if I may, but you're talking about just now about the economic situation, and I wonder if it has anything to do with, you know, two, three decades of relentless deregulation and the fact that the person you put in charge of some of this, like Greenspan, his world view just mm-hmm. does not include the fact that when there's money around and there's people in the financial industry, that there just might be this this desire to take more than their share. It's like it's a revelation to him.
Yeah, and I guess I've answered my own question many times about how capitalism is a very predatory, destructive economic system that only works and only temporarily if it is heavily regulated and heavily watchdogged. Because the inclination of capitalism is to eat and destroy everything in its path, and the deregulation that started with Reagan and went through Bush and Clinton and Bush, yeah, that has been our downfall. I wonder if the people who are soon to be in charge of this country, none of whom are fiscal liberals, and very few of whom are social liberals. These are pretty much centrists. Or in the Clinton mode, kind of progressive Republicans in the Obama administration. I wonder if they get it, if they understand that if we are truly going to save this economic system and keep the country going, they have got to reinstitute ironclad oversight, restrictions, regulations on just about everything that happens in this country where it concerns the economy. I just wonder.
You mean to what's left of it? I mean, there's been so much damage, so deep, so far, so wide. It's such a shame. And, you know, the people that have abused it the most have gotten away. They've taken their profits. They've got blood on their hands. They've got profit in their pockets. And, mm-hmm. you know, they're out of the picture now. They're not being held accountable.
That's why in his speech tonight, that one line, we're all in this together, the economic problems. I wanted to, pull out a knife and start stabbing myself since, yeah. It's like, this is insane. How dare he say this?
Yeah, no, so. That's exactly. Well, you know, our initiative, fingersalutetobush.org, is trying to get as many people as possible across the country to acknowledge George Bush's departure with their with the disrespect that he's deserved. It's well earned on his part.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
What we're trying to do is basically we're doing this. We're lifting a finger for those who can't, Mike. There are a lot of people that are the untold dead in Iraq. You have people that are disadvantaged or in financial ruin here in the United States. You have military people that can't lift a finger because they don't have use of their arms any longer. And we want some people to care. Some people say, oh, I don't give a damn. I can't lift a finger for that, whatever. We're asking for simply that, to take photographs, to document it, to get media publicity, and hopefully embolden Congress, embolden the justice system, that Americans do care about accountability. It reflects incredibly poorly to the rest of the world if we don't have some sort of accountability, and we need to bring this about. Our method is not necessarily conventional, but the conventional methods have not worked.
That's true.
Articles of impeachment and petitions and Congress, it's all failed to this point. If it takes something like a shoe, and our initiative came before the shoe, but if it takes something like that, something bizarre to get attention, that's what we're willing to do in order to make that Bush's legacy. Let's flip George the Bush and let that be a lasting memory.
That sounds good to me. What's the website again for people that might want to go check it out?
FingerSaluteToBush.org. FingerSaluteToBush.org. We have getting good headway. We've been passed. We have 25,000 instruction cards that have been already passed out, getting good coverage. We're getting volunteers coming in, and we'd like to continue that momentum, calling on MoveOn.org members to join us, your listeners, everybody across the country. This is something that can take place everywhere, and that should be the connection there. When you think of George, think of flipping the bush, and take pictures and let's circulate that information. Do it in groups. even have to have your face. Let's make that the legacy. Rather than he's going about polishing the pig, to mix metaphors.
Yeah.
And let's set that on the right track.
Okay, one more time, the website.
FingerSaluteToBush.org.
All right, that's good. Thanks, Bill.
All right, Mike.
All right,
thanks.
Man, I appreciate it. Take care. Did you get that? FingerSaluteToBush.org. Hartman had, Tom Hartman has been promoting this to a greater degree than I have been, and I think it's a great idea. So go to the website, and you know what to do, right? All right, another quick break here, and then we're going to come back and go right back to your phone calls. So stick around. This is the Molloy Program on Nova M Radio.
Sometimes I'm happy, you know, this is... But wars are not a time of joy. These aren't joyous times.
Well, it is for some of the Bush bastards. It was great sport. Great sport indeed. Whether they were Iraqis or Afghans or Palestinians or... it didn't make any difference. It was great sport. You war criminal. You've heard of Reporters Without Borders, modeled on the Doctors Without Borders. This is from, where is this from? Oh, this is a press release from Reporters Without Borders. Reporters Without Borders calls on the Israeli military to investigate and explain exactly how a 16-story building in Gaza City that houses several news organizations, including Reuters, came to be hit by an explosion this morning. An Abu Dhabi TV journalist and a Reuters cameraman were injured in the blast that shook the Al-Sharouk Tower. It was not immediately known whether the explosion was the result of a missile or a shell fired by a tank. Reuters said an Israeli army spokesman contacted the news agency's Jerusalem bureau shortly before the explosion to verify the location of its Gaza bureau. Oh, my God. Reuters had informed the Israeli army of the exact location at the start of the war and was assured by the Israelis on several occasions that it would not be a target. Reporters Without Borders has written to the Israeli Army High Command asking it to shed light on the circumstances of today's incident. This press freedom organization points out that under international humanitarian law, news media must be given the same protection as civilians. What? News media? All right, that's the end of the press release. But the unintended, surely that's unintended, massive, bloody, gore-strewn, dead children-type irony at the end there, isn't it? Huh? Come on, Reporters Without Borders. You're not serious when you write that. Under international humanitarian law, news media must be given the same protection as civilians. If that is the case, in the eyes of the Israeli command, that's exactly what you got today. Wow. Well, as Ari Shavit was, Ari Shavit writing at Haaretz pointed out, you know, this operation obviously is going to be a military success. How could it not be? The Israeli military that has as much destructive capability as any army on earth, because of its a nuclear arsenal, but up against Hamas fighters who, you know, excuse me, are pretty much religious fanatics as far as I'm concerned, too, just like the leaders of the Israeli military are religious fanatics. So there you go. But, aside, you know, that's not what we've been screaming about on this program the past week and a half. It's the horrific death of innocent people in Gaza. But as Ari Shavit wrote, yeah, Israel's going to win the war. They can't not. But the loss of their moral center is guaranteed with this. It's gone. It's gone. It's just gone. Back to your phone calls. Where are we here? Andrew is listening on Sirius Satellite Radio, calling from Chambersburg, PA. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey.
I've called in before, and I'm a conservative, I'll admit that. But now's your chance to convert me. First thing I wanted to ask you is if you have any good books that you could suggest that I need to read, because I just finished a Republican book or a conservative book. Now I'm looking for a good liberal read.
Well, there's so many. I mean, do you want it in economics, world affairs, a political book, Middle East problems, environmental issues? I really can't give you a book, Andrew, that would definitively and clearly lay out all of these issues from a liberal perspective. Your local librarian might be able to help you. Or just go online, just do a Google search, or an ask.com or Wikipedia, and I'm sure you'll come up with an enormous list. But I, you know, I'm not trying to avoid your question. It's just no, I simply can't give you a book that would lay out the. You understand why there's so many issues. It's so layered. There's so many things. So.
And the other question I had is, I've heard the conservative view on the Fairness Act. I was just wondering what your take on that was.
The Fairness Doctrine?
Right. Sorry.
Okay. Well, in the first place, it's never going to be reinstated. The noise that Hannity and Limbaugh and some of these people on the right are making is a false argument. What's that term? It's a red herring, but there's another term. Anyway, it's never coming back. In the first place, it couldn't be enforced. When that law was passed years and years and years ago, it was primarily designed for television. This is back in the day when there were three over-the-air networks, period. That's it. So, and there was no internet. Radio consisted of garbage on AM and classical music on FM. So the whole idea of the Fairness Doctrine was to make sure that on these three over-the-air networks that points of view were presented that were equal, right and left, conservative and liberal, Democrat, Republican, whatever you want to call it. But to call for the reinstatement of the Fairness Doctrine right now is insane. I certainly have no interest in it. At the time in 82 or 3 or 4 when it was rescinded, I thought it was grossly unfair, but the reason it's not needed now is because of just an ocean of choices that people have to get their news. I mean, nobody, unless they're crazy, gets their news off of AM radio, you know, in the form of talk radio. Anybody who does that deserves to be as mentally corrupted as talk radio will do it. I mean, right-wing talk radio is more than willing to corrupt any listener who wants to listen. But that's not where I go, or I would expect you would go, or anyone would go for information. You've got the entire internet now. Oh, my God. Plus cable, TV, dish networks, all kinds of things. So Fairness Doctrine right now would be the same as saying, well, should we go back to the idea that cars don't need seatbelts? I mean, it's an anachronistic idea that has no place. So, no, I'm not in favor of reinstituting it. It can't be enforced.
Right, and I feel the same way. My viewpoint on that is that I feel it violates the First Amendment rights currently. And to quote, my favorite quote is, I might not agree with what you're saying, but I'll defend to the death for you to say it.
Well, that's true where it concerns government interference in speech. But there is no such thing as government radio in this country. If there is, tell me. I'm missing it. Right. It's corporate. Media is corporate owned. And in my opinion, corporations should not have any rights guaranteed by the Constitution, free speech or anything, because they're not human. A corporation is not a human being. It's a bunch of papers filed through probate court and an attorney's office to say that corporation, to say that that a fairness doctrine, if there was such a thing right now, restricts free speech is crazy because there's no government hand. There's nothing there. Look, I don't know why so many people don't understand the First Amendment. It says Congress shall make no law abridging yadda yadda yadda, including freedom of speech. In other words, there can be no federal laws passed telling you that you can't speak out about anything you want to say. But if a corporation, you see, if a corporation says we are only going to present a right-wing point of view, liberals can't sue on the basis of its restricting free speech because it's not government. You understand what I'm saying? And vice versa. If I own a network of all liberals, and I absolutely refuse to allow conservatives on, I'm not violating their free speech. You know why? A, I'm not the government. B, they can go set up their own damn network. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
Okay.
And I completely understand, and that's why I love your show. Even though I am a conservative, it definitely helps me gain better viewpoints and understand things better.
All right. Well, thanks for checking in, Andrew. Take care. Yeah, that whole free speech issue, I don't know why that's so hard, not for Andrew to understand, but for a lot of people to understand. There is now, it's changing as we switch from a democratic republic into a corporatist state, a neo-fascist state. It may get to the point where government does start to intervene where it concerns information. I can't see that happening, though. This is not China. It's not Russia. It's not any totalitarian state where differing points of view are excluded. I don't see how it can be. Again, with the World Wide Web, how can you restrict free speech in this country unless we just convert completely to a Chinese system of government, which is corporatism? We'll be back after the break. Thanks to our crew, Ian Huff, Ben Burt, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Bruce Enberg, and our executive producer, Catherine Bay. Gotten a couple of emails in response to the question about a book. And I should have thought of the first one, People's History of the United States, if the caller who is still listening who wanted to something that gives an overview of the progressive or liberal or democratic point of view as opposed to the regressive, Republican, and undemocratic point of view. A People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn. And the other one, Breeze in Texas, says, try William Grider's Who Will Tell the People? And the subtitle of that one is The Betrayal of America. Or the Betrayal of a American, what the hell is it? Who Will Tell the People is All You Need to Know by William Grider, who used to write a lot for Rolling Stone, maybe still does, and The Nation. So there's your two books, Who Will Tell the People and The People's History of the United States. And, of course, Howard Zinn, who wrote The People's History, is probably one of the more what's the word I'm looking for? The first word that comes to my mind is important people in the United States, but not important. One of the people who is a true believer in the idea of democracy and freedom and, you know, that kind of stuff. So there you go. If you're still listening, two books, Who Will Tell the People by William Grider and The People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn. Back to your phone calls. Roger is calling from Brooklyn, New York, listening on the internet. Hey, Roger.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
Good. That was funny because that was the first thing I was going to say. I was just about to tell the conservative caller about the people's history.
Yeah, that's a good starting point.
Definitely. I really called in to kind of weigh in on the Israeli. Palestinian war at this point. Well, you know, I'm Jewish. You know, I've talked to you before. I've emailed you.
Right.
I'm a progressive, not religious anymore. Totally spiritual, liberated Jew, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of liberated Catholics. liberated Protestants. I hear you.
This makes more sense to me. But anyway, you know, I love my culture. I don't love everything about it. But I'll tell you one thing about just the, even out here, you know, I mean, there's a lot of Israelis who come into this neighborhood, who live in this neighborhood. There almost seems like a sense of entitlement about them, or like almost like a superiority complex.
Mm-hmm.
That I've always hated since I was able to discern it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing I can say is that I was a part of it before, you know, I became conscious of it. And it's terrible. I mean, it's
well,
totally,
you know,
self-destructive.
You're well aware that a lot of Orthodox, any religion feel that way. Orthodox, Catholics, display that kind of, I'm all right, Jack. Attitude. Orthodox Muslims, if that's not an overstatement. But yeah, I
sure, like the whole chosen people thing. You
right,
know, the,
right.
And then it goes right to your head. I mean, it really inflates your ego and it blinds people. And I'm not saying every Jewish person is like that. I'm not saying you know, every religious Jew is a mean person. But I think, you know, the other thing is. But I mean, just like you say, I feel like Jewish people and Israelis have a right to defend themselves, but indiscriminately bombing children. I mean, the children. I mean, it's so unbelievably
heart-wrenching. The part, as long as we're talking about this, the part to me that is almost incomprehensible is this fact. And I've tried many times to explain this. Every Jew that I know is a kind, decent, loving person. I have a lot of Jewish friends here in Atlanta. I have a lot, not so many, but a few Muslim friends, and I could say the same thing about them. But we're talking about the Jews right now. All the Jewish people that I have come in direct contact with, I mean direct contact, have ongoing relationships with, have known. I've said before, my godson is Jewish. The godfather of my son, who's now 30, is Jewish. All the contacts I've ever had with Jews in America have been, I can't think of any where I regret knowing that person or having them know me. And you know, not to make a dividing line between Jew and Gentile, but I'm just saying, you know, I mean, as long as we're talking about that. So that's why it is impossible sometimes for me to understand and process what the government of Israel is doing. That's why I've tried so hard to refuse to make it a Jewish issue, although I understand a Jewish Muslim issue, although I understand that is the core of the issue. Israel was founded by the Jews in 1948 as a homeland for Jews. I mean, there's no way to avoid that. And if Israel is to remain a Jewish state, then it must remain the majority within that state, which is one of the reasons for the constant redrawing of the boundaries, the settlements, and so on and so forth. Now, having said all that, the murder of innocents, whether it's on a bus in Tel Aviv or in a refugee camp in the occupied territories, all of it is horrifying, awful, terrible, and it kills me. It just, I don't mean to, again, it's not about me, but you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's heart-wrenching. It tears it
is.
You apart.
It is. It tears you down to the core. Listen, I'm out of time, Roger. I don't know. What can I say? Call back again, all right?
No problem. Thank you, Mike.
All right. Take care. Yeah, we're out of here for tonight. My experience is very limited. The Muslims that I have known here, whether they're Ethiopia or Somali or Pakistan or Afghans or Palestinians, you know, I've got no argument with them. I've got no problem. You know, I'm not religious. I don't like religion, but I'm just saying the people who are produced from these cultures that I've met. Are good people. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.